Welcome back to the program. There's no question that we baby boomers are aging. And amidst all the talk about health care, retirement, 401ks, and the endless mail from the AARP, the one subject that seems to get skipped more often than not is the process of being a grandparent. We've spent so many years doting on and protecting and encouraging our children, we almost forget that we get to do it again, sort of, with our grandkids. Fortunately for us, if we do forget, we have Annie Lamott to remind us. Always a powerful and prodding voice for her generation, Annie Lamott, in her new book, Some Assembly Required, takes us on her new and unexpected chapter in her life, her own grandmotherhood. It is my pleasure to welcome Annie Lamott back to this program to talk about Some Assembly Required. It's just out in paperback. Annie, thanks so much for joining us.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Talk about how you found out you were going to be a grandparent.
Well, I got a phone call the day before I had 20 people coming to Thanksgiving in 2008, and it was my 19-year-old son, Sam, and he said, I'm going to be a father. And, of course, I was stunned. I thought he was calling to say that he actually wasn't going to be able to get to my house the next day till 3 instead of 2. And my mouth just dropped open. You know, of course, I was shocked. And but as I talk about in Some Assembly, I've learned the acronym WAIT. Why am I talking? So I waited for more information. I said, oh, Sam, because, you know, he's a full-time art student. And it was the last call I ever thought I'd get in a million years when he was this young. So that's how it all started.
And then, of course, there's that thought that goes through your head, I'm too young to be a grandparent.
I'm too young to be a grandmother. I'm only 54. I'm so cute. I'll lose my figure. And then it was only about a day or so before I became extremely happy. I'd always wanted to be a grandmother. I just thought I would be 30.
Right. Talk a little bit about that process. It was, as you say, it was just a couple of days before you got excited about it. But a lot happens in your own mind during that period when you go from terrified or horrified at the notion to accepting it finally and embracing it.
Yeah, I mean, what's the choice, right? You know, first of all, who asked me? And second of all, a lot of the book is really about still being a mother to Sam and realizing that I'm just not in charge of him. He's over his majority. He's on his own hero's journey. I don't get to run along behind him with, you know, water and some chapstick and some sunscreen. And you really, a lot of time, don't have any choice but whether or not you're going to handle things with a little bit of grace and good humor, or whether you're going to cross your arms and be bitter and ungiving. And so it was like, well, I got excited and I was scared, and I would say I'm still excited and sometimes scared, and Jack's already 3.5.
There is that element, and we see it in people from time to time, of bitterness, of anger, and you do wonder what purpose it serves, because life will go on regardless of how bitter or how angry you're going to be.
Really, that's a choice, like whether you move into trust and surrender or whether you stay convinced that you're a victim of something. And very bad things happen to people in life. That's its nature. Life on life's terms has a lot of loss, a lot of disappointment, a lot of awful, awful, awful things happening to the truly innocent. And it was ever thus. And so things happen. A lot of things happen in Some Assembly Required that are very painful. My very darling, beloved Uncle Millard, who was the patriarch of our family, died during that time. And I went to India during the book. I went to a concentration camp in Eastern Europe in the course of writing the book. I wrote a lot about it in the book. I sad things happen to the people we love most, and it's like the choice is that you take a long deep breath and you push back your sleeves and you say, how can I help, or what help do I need, and you move into trust and surrender, or you try to self-will situations into being different than they are, and you try to manipulate people into being different than they are, and you try to manipulate and control and manage and martyr and all of it, and that way is the guaranteed misery.
It's guaranteed misery, and it also takes huge amounts of energy that are so much better spent doing those positive things that you were talking about.
That's exactly right. I mean, you could, on any given day, it's like, I heard someone say once, when I first got sober in 86, I heard someone say, this is a beautiful, spacious day that you've been given, and only you can wreck it. And, of course, I often have, or I sometimes have, and it's also a day you get to, as you get older. I was 59 yesterday, actually. And
happy birthday.
Thank you. I know your presence on the way, and I'm not worried about it at all. But you just realize that that life is unfolding and unfurling, and that that at some point you're really never going to be alone again in it. It's not. I think the terror is that we're alone and isolated in a really miserable, unbearable situation. The truth is, you really learn you're not going to be alone. You've got your pit crew. You know, you've got a few core people who will see you through, who will sit with you, who are willing to feel really crummy with you, and who aren't going to leave until you're back on your feet. So that makes a huge difference. I mean, I don't love aspects of being 59. My feet often hurt. My back often hurts. My vision's failing. But I love that I care so much less about so much stuff than I did at, say, 40, you know. And I you just realize that you don't know how long you're going to live, and that you are really not going to throw the whole day or week or month away trying to have the reality of life be different than it is, trying to get people to do things your way, trying to convince people that your ideas are good ideas, all, you know, all evidence to the contrary. So I felt very, very blessed right away, both during the pregnancy and then when our baby, Jack, well, they don't think of it as our baby. They think of it as their baby, which is horrible. But it is their baby. Amy and Sam have their own baby, and they were not interested in my thoughts and good ideas on how they should raise this baby that was not mine. And you just have to let go. A lot of the book is about struggling with that, how hard it is to let go, how often the acronym WAIT, why am I talking, helps, and that real life is some days are just really hard and your feelings are hurt or you feel very, very afraid, and then that passes.
Was it that they really weren't interested in what you had to say and the advice you had to offer, or they wanted to appear as if they weren't interested? Were they really
hearing it? No,
they
really weren't interested. My opinions and advice were very annoying to them. And I realized that when I intruded into their business that they were going to withhold the baby from me. So I pretended more often than I felt to be the wise tribal elder. And but no, you know, it's really their child. And every step of the way, they have done just a heroic job. I mean, Amy's been a wonderful mother. And the child, Jax, J-A-X, is just a fantastic being. You know, he's reading and running and very, very articulate, and he's got my sense of humor, which is to say it's kind of, it's just endlessly dumb and funny, and that if you laugh, it encourages him, and he'll just run it into the ground, which I like in a guy, but, you know, his mother is very, very sweet and hands-on, and he's got that, and his dad is very sweet, but very, very skilled with his hands and on the floor with the Legos and the things to build with, and Jack has that gift, too, and, so he's really his own little person, and I'm just the Nana.
When you first found out, how much faith did you have in Sam to be a father at 19 years old?
Well, I have a lot of faith in Sam, and I was really scared. You know, there's a lot of people that say, oh, you can't have faith and fear at the same time, but I've never believed that. I don't know that God says that, so I often have a lot of fear and a lot of faith at the same time, and I never, ever, ever lose faith in God, even when things aren't going my way. And so I absolutely believe that that God is always a show-off, and that one day at a time, Sam and Amy would be provided with the stamina and the wisdom and the inner reserves to do a really good job parenting, you know. And some days are hard. It's just that way. Some days you just give up all hope. And it's a dangerous world and terrible, terrible terrifying things happen to children. They get sick, they get shot, they get hurt, and their feelings get hurt. And it's just the way it is. It's the way it's always been. And so sometimes your heart is up in your throat. And
talk a little bit about your feelings towards Amy. After all, she was going to be the mother of this child, and you didn't have the same relationship with her, obviously, that you did with Sam.
No, but we were always very close. She and Sam had been together for some time, and as soon as she got pregnant, even though they were never married, I very much felt like the mother-in-law and introduced myself as such. So I just always really loved her and respected her gifts and strengths. And and sometimes she was by far the more reasonable person when I would go to her to try to get my way. But she's very, very strong and opinionated, so I usually don't get my way with anyone, to tell you the truth. But maybe that's the way it's supposed to be.
What have the biggest conflicts been about? What are the areas that you've wanted to get your way?
The only way I didn't really get my way was that I really, really wanted to get Jax baptized at the church where I was baptized, St. Andrew, where Sam was baptized, and where all of us were going to church, Amy and Jax and I. But Amy's family has been very, very based in Chicago, and one of her most beloved grandmother was Catholic, and it wasn't her church. She loved St. Andrew, but it wasn't her way. And so the long and the short is that we have to realize that babies are baptized by having been born. And so we still haven't decided. I mean, not that anyone's asked me in 3 years, but so that is the one way in which, and I let go. You know, I let go, and I did the work on the inside of really deeply understanding that we didn't need the outside sacrament so much, that this child, I didn't get baptized until I was 31. So, but in I would say 90% of the time, it's not that I got my way, but I just felt like the right choices were made, and that, that this child couldn't have a safer life and a more cherished, loved life. He's just in really great, you know, Sam was somebody who had a public life, but he was being prayed for all those years, I mean, still by tens of thousands of people. So there's something to be said for that, you know, to be a child who's being prayed for by praying people. So I believe Jax is being prayed for by thousands, if not tens of thousands of praying people. And I think, boy, that's pretty beautiful.
How has it changed your relationship with Sam?
Oh, boy. Well, we've both grown up a lot. It's sort of, you know, it's sort of like if you want to grow up, if you want the miracle, it's going to be across the room past your comfort zones, you know, and or may even be down the hall past your comfort zone so you can't even see it. But it just, he has grown up so beyond zebra. And in subtler ways, because I was older to begin with, I've grown up so much. I mean, we've really been through so much. Babies really bring a tremendous stress onto all families, even as they bring joy. And I've learned little by little to let go more. I've learned little by little to just trust the outcome. With Sam, we've always been very, very close. It's just easier to be close to someone in their early to mid-20s than it is to a 19-year-old. 19 is still very teenagery.
Mm-hmm.
I've put a lot of my faith and trust in the year 24 or 25 when their prefrontal cortexes are fully developed. You know? And I happily await the day. But 19 is still a teenager. It's, your brain isn't fully formed yet. The judgment area of your brain is not fully formed. And now more and more and more it is. And he's become successful in his own way as an artist, and that's given him a great deal of strength. It wasn't so great for him not to be Anne Lamott's kid anymore, you know, and now I'm sort of Sam Lamott's mother.
Talk a little bit about what you want to be able to convey or to influence as far as Jax is concerned. How would you like to influence him?
Well, I'm designated reader. I've been reading him books and singing him Union and Jesus songs since he was born. So there's definitely a political pressure on that baby, on that now child. But I have been the reader and the church person for Jax, and Sam every so often will say something that really he says has been hugely influential, and I know that he will from me, and he will have that be a part of his fathering. And one thing is that we just don't give up. It's funny because I can always find anything, and I don't give up. So things get lost, and I find them. And so Sam just had "We Never Give Up" tattooed in small letters on his left arm. He said, and he says to Jax, "Oh, I can't follow this." And Sam says, "Don't give up. We never give up." And then I've always thought Sam as from a writer's point of view that perfectionism is the voice of the oppressor, and that if you're striving for perfectionism, you're guaranteeing an unhappy life. And he's very, very conscious of that. And you sort of think your kids will be mini me, and they're not. They're really, really, really their own people. Sam has his own very, very deep spirituality, but I wouldn't say he's a Christian. He loves Jesus. He'll pray, and he automatically prays, but he's not a St. Andrew Christian. He's who he is. But I'm glad that my focus on spirituality has made it be a focus for him. And both of Jax's parents, Sam and Amy, are deeply spiritual, and all the grandparents. So I'm glad for that. But, you know, in a lot of the big ways, it's going to be Sam and Amy and his teachers. You know, I'm sure you were too. I was hugely influenced by some of the great teachers I had in public schools every step of the way. And so a lot of Jax's influences haven't even entered his life yet.
Anne Lamott. The book is Some Assembly Required, the story of her becoming a grandmother. It's just out in paperback. And I thank you so much, as always, for spending time with
us. Thank you for having me. I love talking to you.
Thank you. We'll take a break.
Have a great day.
You too. We'll take a break. I'll be right back.